well as the regulations have been ready. I'm sure members know that some of them, like the Sport and Recreation Act Amendment Bill, has been ready for since 2013. And we have done as a department most of the things we needed to do. I think on some like new legislation or new regulations, we are still, we are being delayed by the presidency actually to be as open and as honest as it can be. Unfortunately, we can't table legislation before the portfolio committee or in parliament without going through the leader of government business and without cabinet approving the legislation first. So as it is, we have since 2012 we have been trying to get necessary amendments to legislation to happen, and we have not been succeeding, and to also introduce new legislation. We were told just before the general elections that the cabinet has taken a decision, because that year, because of the election program, it was going to be a congested session of parliament and legislation needed to be prioritized. So annually in March, like now, we have been requested to submit before the Office of Leader of Government Business. We have been requested to submit all proposed legislation and amendments. Each year without fail, we can show you our submissions. We have been including this loss to the leader of government business. And when prioritization happened, we are told that our legislation we are proposing is not urgent and is not economically enabling legislation, which is what was adopted by cabinet to be pursued first. So laws that will promote job creation and things like that and so on were what we were told must be prioritized. So we were promised last year that maybe then we must prioritize ourselves first and say if we were to take legislation through, which one would want to go first, and we prioritize them that way. And in it, number one, we had put the amendments to the National Sport and Recreation Act. Number two, we had put the new Academies Bill. Number three, we had put the SAIDS Amendment Bill, the South African Institute for Drug Sport Amendment Bill. And in number four, we had put a whole host of things, including the fitness regulations and so on. But the point I'm saying that was that we were hoping that at least if all else fails, they will consider one of our legislation. And that was supposed to be the NSRP, but as you know, ultimately that was not tabled. In fact, somehow miraculously, legislation that was way in the back of the queue has now been, you know, fast-tracked. The cabinet has now approved the control of marketing of alcoholic beverages bill, and it's now going to go for public hearings. It will soon be tabled here. So even legislation that came after what we originally suggested and we have been submitting has not happened. But just as a way of assisting the committee quickly, the SAIDS Act, we want to amend it just two portions. These are two amendments. This is not new information. I've given it to the committee before. One, we want to clarify the issues pertaining to composition of the board. Right now, there is no space in the law for designation of a deputy chair, and we had never anticipated before that a chair could resign. They have. And as a result, we found ourselves in limbo because the law doesn't really give the minister the power to designate one of those board members to be an acting chair. It's not expressed. We understand it may be implied that the one who has the power to appoint may be the one who actually must do such a thing, but it doesn't really say why or how. So that's an issue we want to address, and also filling of vacancies, because right now, with the last board, when there was a vacancy, the board had to limp to the finishing line, and we're crossing our fingers that if one more member resigns from the board, then the board no longer forms a quorum, and it means we must rerun the process afresh, because it doesn't say what mechanism can the minister follow to fill vacancies on the board. So all that we wanted to clarify. But the most important amendment we wanted to bring to this law was an amendment pertaining to doping in schools and the testing protocols in schools. Right now, The system is an opt-in system, and therefore we are not able to test children without their parental consent. But we want to make a blanket provision that says if a parent allows their child to play sport at school, they are inadvertently allowing their children to be tested. So we're not gonna, so that otherwise it kills the whole philosophy of random testing. Because if I'm to ask you first to say, can I test your child? And then the children during that period stop using the steroids, knowing that they are going to be tested, you know. So it defeats the whole purpose. So we can only do it if you never know when we are coming. And you know we have a blanket right to test at any time. So that's the important amendment we're pursuing there. But like I said, the law has not yet come before. With the Sport and Recreation Act, critical amendments, I think first the issue of Nicholson taught us a lot. When we wanted to appoint the Nicholson inquiry into the, we had to rely on little bit of pieces of laws there, the PFMA provision there and so on. But there were no direct ministerial powers to institute a committee of inquiry. This is very surprising because in most sectoral laws, including even in arts and culture, the National Arts and Culture and Heritage Act provides for the Minister of Arts and Culture's power directly to appoint committees of inquiry. But this one didn't have this. So we want to clarify that, put in those provisions to be able to strengthen that. Secondly, the issue of dispute resolutions. The mechanisms that are there often than not have allowed for a vacuum. I can give you an example of one case. There's a case with SASAF, which is the Fitness Federation, and the Van Rensburgs, which has been running now for more than 3 years. The mechanism allows for SASCOP to be the first port of entry in terms of all of this, but does not necessarily dictate what SASCOP's powers are in as far as intervening. We don't intend to remove SASCOP in dispute resolution because our department was never good at resolving disputes. In fact, the better they are resolved by the sport movement, the better for themselves. However, where SASCOP itself is unable to resolve a dispute, and there has been that. Equally, if SASCOP is an arbitrator in a dispute resolution, there has to be a mechanism for appeal. A higher authority must be able to review their decisions. That higher authority, the law envisages it is the minister, correctly so. And because of that, the minister has got to resolve disputes. But the dispute resolution mechanisms are unclear. And so we want, can the minister appoint another arbitrator to listen to that as nominated by the Arbitration Council of South Africa? Will that person still be seen in terms of the eyes of the law as a hand of the minister acting as a functionary of the minister and on behalf of the minister? Or will the interpretation be that the minister has basically mortgaged his powers, something that he cannot constitutionally do to a third party to exercise law, which that party has not taken oath of office and related aspects? So all this ambiguities we need to clarify in dispute resolution and to bring to the fore and to make the processes much more efficient and faster. So the current status now is that our socioeconomic impact assessment study has already been done, and we are now in the processes of the technical committee for approval. This after it was sent back to us. The South African Boxing Act. Okay, here, as you know, ultimately our intent is to repeal this law in full, is to actually get rid of it. I've previously presented to this committee in 2013 on the combat sport bill and what we intend to do and regulate all combat sports and not just boxing. Mixed martial arts, all of those needs to be regulated under one umbrella. So within that context, that's where we are working towards. We have put this bill in the back burner for now, on the advice of the Treasury, that the amount boxing South Africa has now, which if we are to repeal and put a combat sport bill, the regulatory authority will replace boxing South Africa. And that regulatory authority will overnight find itself having to regulate much more than boxing. And they said that the budget for boxing is not enough to carry that mandate, and it will mean immediately that there is a requirement for additional budget, and in the current fiscal constraint, we shouldn't move there as yet. Obviously, the danger with this scenario is what I said to the committee before. The more people die in the ring, and not just boxing, but whether it's in mixed martial arts or in karate or judo or elsewhere, as long as they continuously die there, and the act as it is written now says that the minister has the responsibility to draft regulations and laws to make sure that people are safe in sport, we always sit with a huge risk of being sued. So what we have been doing is that we have been surviving because the people who have been dying, they've been dying largely in boxing, and they've been dying being 18 and above. So, and we make them sign a warranty which legally it's plausible, but politically it's a terrible thing for the state to say, go take your chances, we are not there, should you die, don't come back to us, you know, and the state basically asks people to waive their own rights, you know, and protect itself against its own citizens, you know. So that's essentially what we are doing now. And the problem is this: should it be amateur boxers who die, 18 and less in age, then that defense won't hold, because that case that came up after the promulgation of the 2013 Children's Act, then we know that we are facing a serious lawsuit. So until we repeal this act and put a new regulatory council and have new regulations, we will forever remain vulnerable to this potential. We pray every day that no one below 18 dies in the ring. But ideally, we should be praying that no one dies at all. So I think that is the issue. But our short prayer these days is about no one under 18 dying, because the ones who are above 18, the principle of voluntary injury and not fit comes into being, and they voluntarily sign their rights away that should they die, that's the situation. When it comes to safety at Sports and Events Act, this we have spoken about, the regulations have been promulgated, they have been gazetted now, Chair. The good thing is that they have been gazetted 3 weeks ago, so we are quite proud about what we have been able to achieve with them. This is done, and Parliament has been duly informed, so yes, the Speaker. The law says we must inform the Speaker, Chair. That's why we do that. Then the recognition of sport bodies regulations of 2010, we have refreshed this, as you know, and we have put in a new instrument, the grant framework and everything related to the recognition process. And we have also amended them, as you recall. We're proposing new amendments for inclusion in as far as the issue of recreation bodies are concerned, because they were not covered for before. Chair, as far as bidding and hosting, again, we have refreshed this. You are fully aware about this. Even before promulgation, this one at least I was asked to come brief the committee and present on it, and we did so. So this one is a bit better. The regulations are more easier because we don't need a long parliamentary process. As long as the regulations are consistent with the original intent of the law, then we can clarify processes and procedures in there and improve on that. On safety at sports, this one I've spoken about. These are 2017. That's what I'm saying. They have been promulgated on the 3rd of March, 2017. So they are good to go. We're proposing a new bill, the Fitness Industry Regulatory Bill, and I've presented at length before about this, what we intend to achieve with it. But important is that currently the fitness industry is not regulated. They don't even have self-regulation, so it's not like there's no regulation at all, so people are vulnerable. The recent cases actually also vindicate us. I'm sure you know of people who have been fighting at the gyms and all sorts of things and so on, and even the racism that we see across gyms, and there is no oversight bodies, and even the fitness industry itself has no its own association or regulatory body. So it is for this reason that regulatory council, we needed to regulate the sector, but also importantly, the owners, managers, every other thing, there aren't procedures in place and even regulations that will regulate this. Importantly also fitness professionals. These days everybody just calls themselves a professional fitness trainer. But no qualifications are prescribed and no service standards and everything are done. And there is not even codes of conduct for practitioners and for everybody. So that, we are doing that. Currently, we are scrutinizing the socio-economic impact assessment done by the presidency on this. And we will refine it. They have given it back to us. The good thing is that I can tell the committee right away that the unit in the president says that the socio-economic impact assessment is good, but we have to scrutinize for the areas where they have suggested that we relook at how we want to go about it. And I've spoken about the combat sport bill already. Then there is a draft provincial academies of sport bill 2017, and we hope it will stick with the 2017 tag that finally it may go through this year. If it doesn't go, you'll see next year we'll be back here, we'll be calling it 2018. So that's the unfortunate part. But the important thing is that we want to regulate the provincial academies, bring harmonization across all, and also define the role that is played by the provincial sports confederations in this, and also for district academies. And then also the services, we need to detail the services and service standards that are required for the provincial academies. Likewise, we're also drafting now the National Sport Academies Bill, which will provide for a new entity of our department, the National Training Center, and which will also provide for other entities based at universities, the high-performance centers based at universities. And we also, in this case, one thing we want to regulate is that for national athletes on OPEX, we want to regulate the rates at which we pay for athletes at universities, because let's face it, universities are public institutions. They are government funded, and yet government or national athletes of our country have got to be treated like foreigners and other people in their own country. So we want to regulate that, because we can't fund one entity and then it seeks to make money out of us in another way. So I think that's the whole notion of what we're trying to do. And that brings us, Chair, to the end of the presentation.
And then just secondly, as I see now with the promotion of the gym, the fitness professionals, I've been in the process of trying to organize, I call it caddy care, a law that would help us to look after the golf caddies at golf clubs. But my biggest concern has always been penetrating through the through the sporting veil, through the codes. Now, I just see that if we've got a Sports Fitness Act, I see that there might be an avenue then to look into this. Is this an avenue that we can pursue through SRSA rather than a sporting code?
Any other questions? Thank you, teacher.
Thank you. Honorable Bartman, in truth, I don't think that you are going to successfully use the fitness bill to address what you are saying. But what you are saying, I'm sure you can write to the minister and propose that, because he also has, in terms of section 13AJ of our law, he has powers, general powers, to draft regulations, it says, on any other related matter to sport. So if you are looking for regulations to regulate the caddies and the rates they get paid and the service times and every other thing and so on, we can do that, because already the Golf Association of South Africa, the PGA of South Africa, already has some regulations pertaining to caddies, although being quite skeletal and thin. They even regulate other things, including when that each and every golf course must have a lightning bell. If the clouds come and the lightning is to come, they ring that bell and everybody knows, they follow it religiously, they just leave the field and come to the clubhouse. So it shows that there are regulations, they are implementing them and they are knowing them. You are right, the best first avenue, because government must not seek to over-regulate. The first thought of avenue must be to convince the golf association itself to refresh their own rules and to refresh their own regulations to comply with what we are proposing. The problem only comes where they don't agree. If, say, for instance, they think it is in the interest of their own members, the real golfers, to exploit the caddies, they are likely not going to agree with the idea of you regulating how much they must pay a caddy per hour, you know, and so on. So, and even the waking hours, they may not agree with that. So, and that's where we come in, where the caddies have lobbied them and they are not being supported. That's where we come in. In fact, we have done the similar thing, but by engaging the Equestrian Federation on the South African Jockeys Association as their sub-affiliate, to say the jockeys are not being taken care of and so on. The good thing is that we gave them an ultimatum. We either regulate you, we write the regulations, which may not be what you like, or you listen to us and refresh your own regulations to meet the requirements of what we're saying. So they were wise enough to choose to write them themselves and to regulate what we wanted them. And then we didn't have to write the regulations for the jockeys, but the matter was resolved. So even with the caddies, I'm sure we can do the similar thing. But if the caddies must show that they have made their advance to the federation and they are not getting the joy, then they can appeal to the minister to intervene, in which case we will intervene and say to them, that to the golf association, to say, please help. Often than not, they would say that this will require support or funding or what. Then we plan for it properly and say, in that case, we'll give you so much, start doing the process until you comply and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I think it is that two-way process.
Thank you,
Dichi.
Let's go to the next present team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to briefly present the third quarter performance information as well as financial information. The purpose of this presentation is to give an overview of targets that we achieved in the third quarter. The report reflects progress made to date against key strategic objectives and annual performance indicators, as reflected in the departmental EPP. Chair, I'll go back to the second quarter. In the second quarter, there were 21 targets to be achieved by the department. Of the 21, 15 were achieved. Achievement meaning that evidence was submitted to strategic support, meaning that they were able to verify the information that was provided. There were 6 that were not achieved, meaning that follow-up had to be made. We only recognize achievement after all evidence and strategic support has confirmed that what has been submitted to them is complete, accurate, and they are able to measure it. It also assists us for audit purposes, because at times you are given information and you are not able to verify. So during the audit, you will also have problems. So they were 21, like I said, 15 were achieved, 6 were not achieved. So meaning that those targets that were not achieved were moved to the third quarter, meaning that we could only verify them in the third quarter. In terms of the third quarter, there were 24 targets to be achieved by the department. Of the 24, 18 targets were achieved and 6 were not achieved. This amounted to 75% of achievement. to program one, Chairperson. There were three targets that we were supposed to achieve. The first one related to the issue of the moderation of performance assessment. We were able to assess everybody up to level 13. So we're still supposed to moderate level 14, which was that in the current quarter it has been completed, meaning that by the end of financial year, this target will get met. I'm only going to reflect on the targets that were not met. I'm not going to speak on everything, if it's acceptable, Chairperson. The other target that we're supposed to meet is number of client satisfaction surveys conducted. With this one, this was presented to the management committee. It was approved. So this one, it was approved in the fourth quarter. So this target is also going to be met by the end of financial year. The last issue related to the payment of suppliers within 30 days. I think this is an issue because in a quarter, if you have one supplier who has not been paid by 30 days, it means that you have not met the target. So this is ongoing. We anticipated that in the next financial year, our systems will be able to ensure that we pay all our suppliers within 30 days. So this is still an issue of paying suppliers within 30 days, even though there's been much improvement in terms of the target. Moving to program two, I'm moving through the slides because it explains what we are supposed to do. When we move to program two, there were 9 targets to be achieved by the program during the quarter under review. 7 targets were achieved and 2 targets were not achieved. So I'll only speak on those 2 targets that were not achieved. There's a target 2.3, number of people actively participating in sports and recreation promotion campaigns and events per year. Our target was 2,178. We're able to achieve We were supposed to achieve 3,900. We achieved 2,859. Here we still need to verify those numbers. So it's a target where, as the information is coming through, cumulatively we're supposed to have 11,700. In a quarter, it's 3,900. So we still need to verify some information. I think even this target will be able to achieve, Chairperson. Number of people actively participating in organized sports and recreational events. Cumulatively, this is a target that we've agreed with the presidency that we would have 1.3 million people participating in sports and recreational events. We achieved this target through provinces. It's a sector indicator where we're expecting provinces to achieve certain numbers. We break that 1.3 against what we give to provinces. We are still validating the information that has been given by province, but all indications as well is that we are going to meet this target, even though it's very difficult, because we are expected to receive information. At times we receive very raw information from province. We need to make sure that to collate the information and add up those numbers. So by the end of financial year, we are anticipating that this target would have achieved it. As part of making sure that we achieve this target, we had to pay other provinces late because they could not give us the evidence that we are requesting from them. But ultimately, all provinces were able to submit all the information that they required, and we released the transfer. There's only one province that was penalized, which is Northwest. We penalized them about 330,000 rand because they could not submit some information to us. We wrote letters to them, followed up with them, but ultimately took a decision that we're not going to give them that money. I think that's the only instrument that we have, is money. If we release the money, it means that you are saying that you've done well. So they've not been able to meet their targets specifically, so we've docked them that money. In terms of program three, We had 7 targets to be achieved by the program, 5 targets were achieved and 2 were not achieved. In terms of targets that were not achieved, it related to number of athletes supported through the Ministerial Sport Bazaar program. Chairperson, we've subsequently met this target in the fourth quarter. I can confidently say it because support means that you have been able to pay for this, at least that we, that like this program. So we've been able to pay those institutions and also to provide any other support that we've agreed with them. So this is the target that we've met in the fourth quarter subsequent to that. The last quarter, the last target 3.6, number of national and international sporting events, is related to ICAI. Here, Chairperson, a decision was taken that we will not set up this ICAI for the Rio Olympics because of the cost containment measures that were issued by Treasury. But we also informed the President on this one. So it was agreed that we should not have ICAI in Rio, even though at least we are supported by the minister in Sasco at the Olympics. Moving to program four, we had four targets, all of them were achieved. The targets that were set. Moving to program five, there was only one target that we were supposed to meet, all that target was met. I think, Chairperson, in the overall, most of these targets that were not met in the first, second quarter, in the third quarter, we analyzed in order for us to make sure that in the fourth quarter, we make sure that we meet those targets. We, whatever information that we are supposed to collect, we make sure that we collect. We prepare ourselves for audit. All indications are showing that most of the targets that we've set ourselves, we'll be able to meet them in order for us to give the information to the auditors. With those few words, Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Another members?
Thanks, Chair. Welcome to the total report. I thought you'll do quickly with their finances. You know, I think because... But in the future, I'm just saying it will be easy for us to check the savings and what we'll spend. I wanted to find out from your program 5, infrastructure support, numbers of provinces which facilities counted. You didn't accumulate anything, you didn't achieve on that one. Or why is it? Because I see, I need an explanation on that one. Sorry, I'm a newbie, maybe you'll explain everything for me to understand. But another question that I wanted to find out, these are your KPIs. And for an example, program 3, Winning Nation. You did not achieve this, but you're saying, Orlando, something akai. You mentioned that they took it, but it's your KPI, but they took it out because you did not achieve. Can you explain that? Thanks, Chair. Those are the...
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll respond to a few questions that the DG will ask. The issue of the Sport Trust, maybe let me start with it. Annually, the Sport Trust is audited, but both by our auditors and their auditors. They've got their own auditors as well. It's true that we transfer a sizable amount of money to them. There are programs that maybe the committee members will be aware that you are implementing with them. For example, you would have a national school championship where you would receive the money from the lottery. We are not able to apply to the lottery directly. They assist us with the application to the lottery. So there would be a program that we've agreed that we are going to partner with them because of those reasons, where they are able to fundraise on our behalf, they are able to do all those things on our behalf. So we are not sure, because even in our engagement with Treasury, they've raised the issue with us. We wanted specifics to say what are the issues. At any given time, at times they ask us questions and write and respond. So I'm not sure if it's still an issue or what, because we've been able to respond to them. Actually, in the next financial year, they've moved the sports trust from some allocation to the other allocation. Yeah, I suppose it's in order for them to, I don't know why, but we've complied. We've complied with whatever they've requested from us. The issue around spending by provinces, I think like I said, the only measure that we have is to withdraw funding to them. And we would write to them in terms of the DORA. The DORA says that within 30 days you must write, 60 days write, 90 days you must write, then you must withhold. That's what we did with Northwest, because that's the only province that we've not been able to transfer the whole allocation. But Chair, you would agree with us that we would have agreed with provinces in terms of their business plans. We are going to meet these targets with the money that we are going to transfer to you. So it's not like they are utilizing their provincial allocations, those that have got, to meet those targets. We would have transferred the money to them and say that we are expecting the following outcomes. We go to an extent to say that with our grant that we give you, a particular percentage should go towards this program, a particular percentage should go towards paying off staff. That's the level of our agreement with them. They would have submitted the business plan signed by the HOD and the DG agreements. Come implementation, it's something else. We have to follow them up, we have to write to them, and we have to do all those things. But that's what we've been doing. We write to them, the X says that you must write after 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. So that's what we do. In terms of procurement processes, I think it says that had major problems in the previous financial year relating to procurement issues. BSA, more than anything, the reason why they could not get a clean audit mostly was because of how they recorded their transactions. It was accounting. So it was said that had issues, but in terms of the agreement that the DG has had with the CEO, we've agreed that at some point they must just achieve a clean audit. I mean, we can't justify such institutions that small, both of them. I mean, they should be getting, if the department can get a clean audit, they should just be getting a clean audit as well. So we would need to meet with them at some point. We met with all the bodies that we transferred money to. We met with SAIDS, we met with BSA, we met with Love Life, we met with SCORE, in order for us to raise the issues that the AG is consistently raising with us, with them. So all indications were that they've been able to address those issues. DG? The issue of the IT query, consistently we've been addressing the issues that the AG is raising, but most of them, the issues that they've raised, they will be corrected, some of them, once we move to the new building. We're in the process of looking for a building, or stay in the building and start investing in the current building to address the issues that they, because it does not make sense. You are going to invest in IT infrastructure, and within a year you have to move building, and you can't take those, the cablings and all those things. So in the near future, we are going to finalize the issue of whether are we staying or are we moving. We are currently engaging with Public Works. All indications is that by the end of financial year, we would either be staying or be moving from that building. Thanks, Chair.
when I was hearing you saying that they have made penalties with the Northwest, I wanted to start with that. We're not yet reporting to you about our oversight visits from Northwest, but we wanted to check whether is it the right of the others here, because when I'm hearing you saying this, I'm remembering that the way that sport is structured in Northwest, it's structured in a way that they are taking that sport is a baby of the education. And we wanted to check whether are you not going to consistently having this problem? Because even if we were there as a committee, we've seen that they've done nothing, a concrete report about sport. Instead, they are reporting about education. So we've noticed that education is just, sport is a baby of education. And I know that there is this 3 spheres of governance, and maybe we don't enter anyway. I'm suspecting that's the problem that we are facing. But also, with the Auditor General, they did give you additional funds to locate, to fulfill your posts in the infrastructure support. But to our understanding, are you still using consultants to do that work or have additional posts? If you can clarify us on that. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, in the current financial year, we were given additional, actually over the MTF is 10 million, in order for the department to capacitate itself in the infrastructure unit. We're given 10 million, so we started the process of recruitment. But while you are recruiting, you still need to implement infrastructure projects. We've got consultants that we are utilizing at the minimum rate. It's not like we are solely utilizing consultants. We've got consultants in the department that are doing that are just assisting us minimally. We've got a director currently, deputy director. So in terms of what is expected of them, unfortunately that they will not be able to assist us. But the chief director is starting. I think we'll be starting in April. The chief director of the unit and the director will be starting very soon as well. So the intention was just to get consultants to assist us. It was a transitional arrangement. It's not like the intention is to, because you would know how Treasury views the issue around consultants. Actually, when you utilize consultants, there's in terms of the practice note, instruction note on cost containment measure, it says that there are measures that are put there. So the intention is to ultimately government moving away from consultants to capacitate itself. So that's what we are currently doing, Chairperson. It's true that there are consultants, but we're using them minimally with a view that immediately after we capacitated ourselves, we will no longer utilize consultants. The issue around Northwest, I think structurally is a problem. I think the DJ has already spoken about how they are structured. I mean, immediately you have education and sport. Sport takes back seat immediately. Even the HOD, there is not even consent. I can imagine how many headcoms does he attend. I mean, it's not his priority. We have to follow him in making sure that all what is required is done in Northwest, but it also makes sense. I mean, his KPAs show 90%, if not 95%, it's metric results and all those educational related issues. So it's a problem, Chair. Actually, it will be interesting because when we are following up with them on them complying, at some point they told us straight that they will not be able to do that. That's why we took a decision of docking them that amount. You know.
Thanks, Chair. I think the CFO captured it succinctly. Chair reported to this committee. I asked the intervention of this committee about the Northwest. And it is because we understand that constitutionally, we can interfere in how the Premier sets up his cabinet. That's his prerogative. The fight we engaged in when it happened, and we consistently steadfastly stood on, was the one saying that in the Constitution, the portfolios are listed there. It's sport and recreation. It's seen as one portfolio. It doesn't mean you can't put it with education or with environmental affairs. But what it means is that you can't separate it. So they are listed as arts, culture, it's sport and recreation, it's environmental services, it's economic development, and so on and so forth. So you cannot say, I will only do sport, but recreation I won't do. I'll do sport only with, say, maybe environmental affairs. You can combine them, but you are still obligated to do recreation. What the Premier had done, he had taken the staff in the department who were responsible for recreation and had moved them with arts and culture to local government. And he had taken sport and staff who were responsible for sport and moved them to basic education and called in the Department of Basic Education and Sport Development. This created a quagmire overnight. As the transferring officer, who do I transfer to those in recreation or to the ones in here? When we call a MINMEC, which of these two MECs must attend? The MEC responsible for recreation or the MEC responsible for sport? And equally, just how do you differentiate between the two? Because there is a very artificial dichotomy in as far as mass participation is concerned. In school sport, in community sport, vis-a-vis recreation and the recreation program. So the two go hand in hand. And even some of the programs are co-funded as recreation and sport at the same time. So how do you divide the budget and how do you make sure accountability is? And then they came, they had a big meeting in my office trying to justify that thing. And they said, I must transfer to the DG of sport and education and sport development, and he in return, he will then enter into an agreement with that one of recreation on how they're going to work. And I showed them that delegatus delegare non potest, powers delegated can be delegated further, and they couldn't transfer further themselves to someone. And so there was a problem immediately overnight on how we work. In order to resolve this, I could see the Premier felt hard done by my decision. At that time, I had already docked the money. We were now in 7th month of the financial year, and we had not transferred the cent to them. They were already beginning to run into cash flow problems. They couldn't pay salaries because the grant wasn't coming. And then the Premier reported me to the President. And it was at that stage that the next committee meeting I came to seek shelter from you, because I understood being reported there what it meant if I was to be disciplined, you know, and that I must have accounted to the representatives of the people and explained the rationale of my decision. But ultimately the DG in the presidency agreed that on the sidelines of Fossat, he will call the DG of the Northwest and myself, and they invited that HOD to that meeting. And then I was asked nicely to say, no, in this case, we are not going to make an announcement, no anything, and we are not going to change the name of the department, but those 6 staff members of recreation, we are going to take them from there, and we'll bring them under education and sport development, and both recreation and sport now will be together. We only have one HOD and one AEC to worry about. So it was sort of a compromise, so to say, because now all of a sudden the portfolio was together, sport and recreation was in one department, which satisfied our accounting purpose and our duties as administrators. But politically there has always been a problem, and without
the risk of offending Honorable Bergman, I don't want to play politics. I was just explaining that. But politically, there is a problem there because sport will suffer at the altar of basic education, it being the biggest priority and so on. And this committee knows very well the issue I've always lamented. We're supposed to deliver school sport with basic education, and the chair knows that the DG of basic education, sport is a footnote in his performance agreement. It's neither here nor there. He's worried about textbooks swimming in the Limpopo River and, you know, all sorts of other things, but he's less concerned about what we're doing. He wants better pass rates, metric, and that's what he's preoccupied with, and that's the problem we're having. That HOD is caught up in this situation, and it will always be like that until it's only, I've raised this also with your counterparts in the Select Committee for Sport in the National Council of Provinces, because they are the people who can summon the Premier and summon that department and ask how is this happening and how they account. But there is nothing honestly stopping this committee as well from engaging with the process as well. But that's not for us administrators to determine how they are structured. For us, we were fighting an administrative battle that says the portfolio can be separated because accounting-wise, it creates a mess. The portfolio must be together. It is now together, but also clubbed with basic education, a bigger sister. So it is always going to suffer. Let me move to the issue, Chair. The CFO has answered the issue of the sports trust, but let me tell you this. There was no other way for us to give the sports trust money. In fact, even before I became DG, it has always been like that, Honorable Ralkoma. They have been getting money as a sport body. Because even what I was saying in the earlier presentation, that we need to amend the recognition of sport bodies regulations to cater for entities like this. Sports NGOs, also recreational bodies. Currently, there is no framework that provides for them. The only way for us to recognize them is to use the current regulation, which will recognize them as a sport body like they are SARU or SAFA or whatever. That's the dilemma. And the budget has been the one in transfers. Earlier, when Parliament, not this committee, the committee before, I think Honorable Moose is the only one who will remember this. This committee was very vociferous when I arrived as a DG that Love Life must go and the funding must be put into mass participation. But the Treasury, in response to the calls of this committee, led by then Budana Khombele as the chair, Treasury wanted to protect that money and not to move it. They created a new schedule on the budgeting schedule. That thing was never there before. And it happened with our department for the first time. They created a new schedule in the allocation. They call it what non-profit organizations. They put up that schedule and in it was Love Life alone. And they ring-fenced the money. And the money at that time was about 33 million. They ring-fenced it. In short, that money, I can't touch it. It comes, all I can do is set the conditions for its use, and I have to transfer all of it. And if I can't transfer it, I can't reallocate it to other votes, sub-votes. I have to surrender it back to the National Revenue Fund. They created that. So now, as we were busy wrangling and so on, we asked them, what discomfort do you have about this arrangement? They said no, because it's not just sports trust that we are recognizing as a sports body. There's also SCORE there. There is SSCN, the Sport for Social Change Network. There is all these smaller NGOs working with us. We put the money there. We have just added the Gilchrist Foundation for Cricket Development in there as part of the program to roll out the hubs. But they aren't Cricket South Africa. They are a foundation that is doing good for sport. Previous years, we funded things like Dreamfields, from that type of thing, John Bellman, and we give him money, roll out this thing and get township kids out and so on and so forth. So what they have now said to us is that no, the problem is that the trust is getting a significant amount of money. It's twice, they get about 20 million a year. It's twice what SCORE gets at about 9.5 million. It's twice that. So they were a bit concerned that we're entrusting the NGO with so much money. And so we told them, but in the first place, that's the reason why we started the sports trust. Former minister, the late Steve Chwete, the reason he started the sports trust was that when he went to business to ask for money, people in business, the big companies said, no, but they're uncomfortable about giving their money to government. Because government has a terrible reputation. And even our department was getting the slimmers then. I think we must recall the history very well. So there was discomfort. It's not this department today that's getting clean audit. Then it was not like that. It was terrible. The audit outcomes were very bad. And no one was willing to give their money to a department that couldn't account even for the money test and give it more money. So because of that, they decided that we rather have a vehicle on which we can put our money in there, and government can also put its money in there, and we deliver jointly together. And so the sports trust was started, and NetBank agreed to host it. In the process, NetBank also created the Green Trust and also created the Arts and Culture Trust and so on. But the sports trust was a precursor to that. And NetBank said they are a sponsor. If you take a NetBank account, every 1,000 you generate in this, they donate 10 rand to the trust, you know. So that money then keeps on coming in into this big pot. So big companies like Coke, SAB, Sun International, what, they are all board members. They have representation on the board together with us. We nominate just one person to sit on the board of the sports trust. So we started the sports trust. So it's our vehicle. It's just that it's not registered as an entity like boxing. And the reason why we couldn't register it that way was that the board is not really appointed by the minister. It's a plurality board, which companies, founding members in terms of the trust deed, can also nominate. So there is, we are even in a minority. We just have one seat out of a board of 12. All of them are private sector people. So with it, there was no other way for us to give it money without recognizing it. We had to find a way of recognizing it. The only way to recognize it was this. But interestingly, this year, when Treasury was giving us, the reason the CFO say they moved now the trust to another schedule is because without telling us anything, they just, when we saw the schedules that they were doing the indicative allocations for the next financial year, meaning 2017-18 financial year, we realized that they had moved the sports trust under transfers of sport bodies. They have shifted it to where Love Life is. And they ring-fenced money. They have allocated about 20 million. So they have allocated the same 20 million we were giving the sports trust. That helps us, actually. If I tell you, that helps us a great deal because it means that that money can be touched. Where it is, it's like the Love Life money. We can only but transfer it to the trust, and we can't use it for any other purpose, which is surprising for people who say they are complaining about this, that they will then lock money and ring-fence it in an entity that they say they are less concerned about. But they have moved that money there. They have moved it there. So now going forward, we'll be paying them from that schedule, saying that from where I have discretion, whether I give them, should I give them 12, should I give them 18, or should I give them 20 million. I no longer have that discretion now. They have now put it there, it is 20 million, and that 20 I must pass it to the sports trust. I can only set the conditions. So that's the story, so you get the background very well, because I don't want, every year, they have raised questions we have answered. They asked us, so how much did you give them? What did they do? We get the annual report of the sports trust and everything they account to us, we give to the treasury. There's a year, I remember, I think it's 2014, where they also requested to go see some of the facilities. They went, the treasury officials went there alone. They went and saw them. And I had in the government corridors that they were happy with what they saw. But that's not what they said to us. They didn't say anything. They just pretended as if they didn't see the facilities, but the facilities were there. So, and I think maybe that's why they are putting the money the other side. I would not know why they are doing it. But the AG has audited the sports trust every year. Every year. And even the first time, I remember, once when I was asked this question, I realized that maybe people suspect that there may be something untoward. It is me in the engagement meeting that I requested the AG to say, you know what, there's been a number of questions that were raised about this question. Can you go, this is how much we gave them, this is the agreement. Can you, in your engagement, also include them in the audit? Because they were not included. And then even before AG was auditing federations, the sports trust, they began auditing them in 2013. They audit them every year. And the AG has always come back. In, after first year, actually, in 2013, when they came back, the AG gave me feedback to say, hey, those people are running a tight ship. You know, they are doing a great job and we are happy with what we see. So, as it is, even this year we had asked again that the AG include them in the audit? Because I don't like the things that are hanging. By now the committee maybe will know me. I don't want things that are not clear. And if there is doubt, I want it sorted out quickly. And the treasuries are maybe about something, they must say to us that we have discomfort here, we have to, so that we can take corrective measures. Which brings me to your issue of the AG's audit plan and audit action plan. Of the 18 issues that were given in the audit action plan last financial year, we have attended to all of them except one issue on our part. I think it's still the issue of the 30 days, payment in 30 days of all suppliers. That's the one outstanding thing on our part. But every other thing that the AG raised, we attended to. The other two things that are there, which they don't concern the department directly, are the issues you raise, which concern sales and boxing. CFO has clarified that. With sales, CFO says at some time they must get a clean audit. It's not some time, it's specific. I've given them till March this year to get a clean audit. And then asked for additional allocation, and I linked the additional allocation to this. I said to them, they'll only get more money if they are getting a clean audit. So I've signed that agreement with the CEO of SAIDS. Unfortunately, I don't have the power to discipline that CEO. If the matters are recurring, I will ask the minister myself via an internal submission. I'll ask the minister to say, I have this agreement with this fellow. Can you tell that board, which is accountable to you, to hold that fellow accountable that he meets this requirement? Because that's the only way we can get it to work. So I've dangled a carrot already, Chair, of additional money should they get a clean audit. If they don't get it, we must wield the stick. And the stick would be to get the board to hold him accountable in this regard. And I think that is a key issue. We have set the deadline. For boxing, we didn't set them a deadline for a clean audit. We set them a deadline for an unqualified audit opinion. They can still have a few matters of emphasis, but they must get an unqualified opinion. And with them, we'll only set them a target of a clean audit now when we do the transfers for 2017-18. We're expecting them next financial year to get a clean audit, not in this audit outcome. This audit outcome, we're expecting an unqualified audit opinion. And I can assure you, even the AG in our meeting with them, they reported a little bit on the entities. And we have seen significant improvements since the new management of boxing was appointed. Even the programs they are running, the look for money and everything is beginning to pay off. So I think the young man, Sulfara Lizaga, is proving to be true testimony of what we had wanted as a remedy for that place. So I think it's getting well, Chair, and we are happy with that. On the issue of IT, the CFO is afraid to sing our praises, honestly. We have corrected this. The issues he's raising is not what was in the AG's report about rollout of the IT framework. But the issues around the IT framework, the Microsoft platforms and every other thing that was there, and even the policy framework that AG said was not in place, we have put all of that in place, and at our last engagement with the AG, we have given them everything that they required. So that you will not see in the audit action plan anymore. It's done. Let me respond to the two issues that were raised by Honorable Nkongo. Ekaya is a hospitality suit of government. I mean, markets, we do it with Brand South Africa and the International Marketing Council, and we also do it in partnership with SASCOC. So medal ceremonies, all those things and so on, happen at Ekaya. And Ekaya is also a good platform. Most of our athletes, because by our South African code, they are either there in the athletes' village or on the track, and on the so-called day offs, our athletes, unlike Americans and everybody, are not allowed to loiter anyway. So Ekaya is their best place in a contained environment to relax, to get access to internet, to do this, to entertain themselves and so on in a proper manner. That doesn't bring the county into dispute. I'm sure all of you know Ryan Lochte now and his case with the Brazilian police and of faking to have been robbed and so on and so forth, and only to find that it's all a lie. So none of our athletes at all our Olympics have ever embarrassed us in that way. I'm sure you know this by now. So, and the Ekaya has been a good hospitality suite for them to have good time, family time, and this is because most of their partners and relatives and what are not allowed to go to the Athletes Village. This is where they socialize with them and meet with them. It's a service we render nicely for our athletes, also for dignitaries of South Africa. We also have bilateral meetings with ministers, because at Olympics, all ministers are there. So it's a good time to meet with countries and to exchange ideas. So ICAIA serves that purpose. It's our bases, our offices, everything. And even SASCOC runs from there when we are. So we were supposed to have this. We normally have it at all major multi-quota tournaments. We're supposed to have it for this. We had budgeted for it. It was in our APP. Then we got a new letter from the Treasury saying that hospitality suites like that and so on are considered entertainment and we should discontinue. Immediately we wrote to the presidency to inform them that we have now been told that we can't do this and it's in our target. So we got a letter from DPME saying we can strike the target off because of that. We have given the AG, they will still audit the target by the way. So this explanation, the AG has got to look at it, see the actual letter from the Treasurer and satisfy itself that we couldn't proceed with it. So that part is underway and that's what we're busy with. As it relates to the provincial audit thing, more or less the same thing. This issue of the provincial audit, I think the older members will now be bored if I repeat the story again. They know it very well that we reduced this to account and then finally agreed that we'll do one audit a year because just sheer size and money, which brings me to the issue of capacity. We have hired the people we need to hire, some of them. Even at full scale, even if we fill all vacancies, we will never have sufficient capacity to do all what we expected to do. So once in a while, the use of a consultant will become necessary. Let me give you an example. We have graphic designers in-house who design annual reports, things like that, and so on. But there are times when, like in the third quarter, because that's our busiest quarter, it's summer, it's time for sports, it's time for activities and everything. Our activities are so congested. Our two graphic designers simply can't cope with the volume of what they are required to do. So from time to time, we would then say, and that time is also the time we have to be thinking first draft of the APP for next year, tabling this, that. We always go at that time to go source from private providers. We ask the printer, can you also do graphic designing of this report for us? And we pay them for that, although we have internal graphic designers. So it's an issue of capacity and as and when. But honestly, you have seen the report of the Public Service Commission. We are ranked the second lowest department that uses consultants relative to our budget. So we aren't doing bad. It's not like we're consultants heavy, and we try to build capacity internally as much as we can. And that's why we asked the Treasury that we will not want to lock ourselves in such a long-term agreement of having to work only with consultants. This unit is a union. They've given us money only now. We have only begun hiring people now in this financial year. And them, the Treasury, have agreed with us. I can assure you, if we have an engineer already, he's alone. But the geotech studies that he has to do, when a facility has been delivered, me and you can just go look at that facility and then think that it looks good, and we sign it off and we pay the contract. But that's not how you assess a sports facility, whether it's built well and so on. Our engineer, he goes there, he drills, he do the geotech survey, he do soil analysis, he looks at compaction, things that me and you with our naked eye, we will not see. So even him alone now, he's not coping. We are to hire two more engineers. I can tell you it's still not going to be enough. Because this is the reality of the situation. Even we're hiring only in terms of the structure, only one quantity survey. We're hiring only one architect. It's never going to be enough. An architect that designed a medium-sized stadium takes minimum 2 years to design a medium. That's why the designs for stadia are so expensive. So you can imagine that if we have only one architect and we have money only to hire one, if he's busy with one project, he's locked in it, say, fairly for 6 months. If something urgent comes up and we need to plan and we need to do something, we are going to be forced to source in some capacity. So I'm saying, I don't want me to promise you that I will log in after we have hired competencies, then consultants are all but gone. We will follow what the Treasury say. Those regulations they issued, the issues that the CFO speak about that we need to comply with, we will. Amongst them is that we need to convince them, the Treasury, that indeed there is no capacity to do it internally. And so if we can show them that and what our people are busy with and they accept, only then we can source additional capacity. But I think that's how we have been working in this regard. And I'll stop there. I won't go about the issue of the spending because it is Honorable Bergman there who once suggested that in one of the meetings, I think it was his second meeting as a member of the committee, he said, why do I come to the committee and lament that the provinces are not doing what I want and I don't put penalties against them? And I duly listened to him and began work around that. And then I went to the Treasury to convince them that we need to amend the grant framework to include this, and Treasury asked me, why do I want to do that? Do I really want to do that? And I convinced them that, no, the committee prefers that, and I listened to the committee. And once Treasury agreed, I had to convince my minister, who was also concerned that politically this may create a problem for him with other MECs and so on. And I said, well, administratively, doesn't help me if I'm a lame duck DG. And he finally supported me, and we introduced the grant framework. And I know that thereafter, even the former Shadow Minister of Sports, Sweet Malati, in the debate commended us, the department, for introducing such a framework. And we can't just have a framework there hanging. We have to use it if the need arises, like as was the case in this case. We needed to show that it can bite, and it did bite. So that's the situation. And I said to the committee, you rather punish me, and the Treasury rather come here complaining to you that I paid provinces late. It's best that way. It's a lesser sin than the sin that says I gave people who are not accounting money and I just continue giving them. That's irresponsible where I'm sitting. So it is for that reason that even today, maybe the Honorable Bergman doesn't know how much that idea of his has strengthened my hand. It has helped me a great deal. It is the first time you hear the CFO saying that that target of 1.3 million were likely to. Previously, you know that each time I came and I lamented and I said, I'm dependent on the provinces to do this and they are not doing it, so we're likely not going to achieve this target. It's the first time we can say with some degree of confidence, because now we have a leverage and a mechanism we can use strongly. For that, I have the committee to thank them, Honorable Bergman, and it's working. It's good feedback I thought I should give.
Honorable DG, that's how this committee, I know, we were not ashamed to tell the minister to you when we are not happy. And what I know, you don't undermine our contribution. And except that I must tell you that sometimes those gentlemen decision will cost our community. As we are hearing us saying that what we've discovered in Northwest is because of those gender agreement that they are not even assisting the department. It's worse with us that you are doing the oversight. We have seen a very, very, very bad experience. Surely, honorable members, yesterday, DG, the report of Northwest was first tabled to us. It's in the agenda, and I don't know whether we'll be doing justice to deal with today, but I'm giving you sorry that each and every member was going to debate in that plenary. Each and every member was going to debate will put the scenario of our visit from Northwest. What I like about this committee, when you are doing the oversight, if something is wrong, it's wrong, irrespective of political affiliation. That's why I was saying that I'm suspecting that we must keep on having a unit on that, but we must have a robust robust debate. We're not happy on what was discovered then, and we're happy that also you are saying that that arrangement made that you must put some penalties. But honourable members, I'm suspecting that by the responses of the UDG and the colleague, they are arming us those things that we love and want to see happening when we're doing our oversight. You must count us that will come forth right when we're debating. If you still remember this committee, especially the chairperson board and the rest, were not happy on the gentleman's agreement about between yourself, treasurer, and COPTA, because we wanted to be fair that we want APC, but we're hoping that one other time will report to us about the program, how far it is of the MEEC, because we've seen that when we wanted what we wanted, you were rather take what at least they are trying to come nearer on what we wanted. But come report, time of reporting, we'll love to hear from you not today whether those programs that are there, money is not with you, money is with another department. Is your program having blessings and on what we can say that now the MEEC, we do see that those millions that they gave us, I'm suspecting that with those words, you have empowered us. Never mind that we started on that note. Sometimes it deserves that we must be robust, we must not agree upon other things, but when it is time that we must differ as leaders. So the financial part of it, you want to present on that, yes. So I was just on the general discussion and questions. So far we are happy. Let's see the number. You cannot politicize the numbers. That's why I'm starting by agreeing that we've done a good and our questions are answered, and you'll be noting those things that we wanted, that the improvement we must see when we are coming next time. But as this committee, we did have meeting with Boxing South Africa alone and say, so I'm saying some of the things that you have reported to us, we did call those entities, and would love to see what was recommended to themselves and what you are advising them to see those things happening. Let's go to Mnotwe. Mali.
Okay, thank you, Chair. This report is for the third quarter, it's for 9 months in the financial year. I think the committee knows that our budget now is 1026 billion, and we just passed the billion mark. The total spend was 856.6 million, which is 83%. Ordinarily, we are supposed to be at 75%, but Chair, the committee would know that most of our programs, we implement them in the third quarter. So that's why we are where we are. You would know that in the first quarter, we would be under 75%. Second quarter, we are under 50%, but in the third quarter, we move up. So, because most of the programs are implemented in the third quarter. even the cash flow that we submit to Treasury is in line with this. It's in line with the fact that we need most of the money in the third quarter. So we've made payments of 856.6 million, including compensation of employees. Spending on compensation was at 72%, totally 77 million, out of a budget of 106.5 million. The underspend was due to vacant posts at that time. The director's cruise port has already started. We've also filled number of vacant, junior vacancies. In terms of goods and services, we're at 90% by the end of December. We've spent 151.4 million out of a budget of 167.9. Like I said, most of our programs are implemented in the third quarter. In terms of transfer, we're at 84%. The same is the same. This is the same as goods and services. We would have made most of the transfers by the third quarter. We'll be left with transfers that we're making in the fourth quarter for provinces. When we go to the detail, we'll go through it. So by this time, by the end of December, we're at 84%, which is totaling 624.9 million out of a budget of 749.8 million. In terms of payment for capital assets, we only have a 2.1 million budget. We've made payments of 1.4 million, which is about 65%. In terms of detail, Chairperson, I've already spoken to the issues. We have spent 83%. We have a budget of 1 billion. We've spent 856.6 million. We're left with 169.9 million. In terms of compensation of employees, we're left with 39.5 million. Goods and services, 16.5 million. Transfers, we're left with 123.6 million. In terms of programs, breakdown, program one was at 71% by the end of the third quarter. We've made payments of 93.8 million out of a budget of 132.8 million. We've got compensation of employees budget of 75.1. We've made payments of 56.8. We're left with 18.3. Goods and services, 64%. Expenditure 35.3 out of a budget of 55.4 million. Capital assets, 64%. We've got a budget of 2.1 million. We've spent 1.3 million. Program two, we've overspent on goods and services. All this where we've overspent, Chairperson. Treasury has given us a letter, approval of our environment. Most of these issues, you will not see them in the next financial year because we are allocating money now where it is needed. We had an issue of misallocations here, but in the next financial year, we've aligned our budget now. Even number of requirements that you request from Treasury, they are going to be very minimal. But all this would have been corrected because Treasury has already given us. We wrote to them requesting that we wire some money in order for us to correct this. Over expenditure. In terms of program three, we've spent 53% of our budget. We had 91.1. We spent 48.7. We are left with 42.4. In terms of program four, we had a budget of 137.5. Expenditure 119.1. We're left with 18.4. Our smallest program, we had a budget of 16.2 million. We spent 7.1 million, we are left with 9.1. So in the overall Chairperson, that's how we looked like by the end of December. Where we are now, we are only left with 2 days before the financial year. We've cleaned up our books. We are anticipating that we'll spend our usual 99.9% of our budget. That's where we usually are. We've requested, like I said, Treasury has approved our environment, so our books are in order. We are just waiting to do the financial statement we audited. We anticipate that in the current financial year, we don't anticipate major issues with the AG. Our endeavor at any given time is to reduce our findings. Last year we had about 18. We are anticipating that we want to move them further. Below 10. That's what our intention. So that's where we are, Chairperson.
Thank you.
this committee that for us it's not how we start.
Where we want to be, and we are comfortable
Like I said, the CFO is a modest one. I'm not so modest, I'm quick to speak. We are confident we are going to get a clean audit again. Thus, he says we will not have issues. No, we are confident we will get another clean audit. That's how confident we are about our systems and what we do. And that's where we are, because otherwise it's defeatist that we expect saints to give us a clean audit and we can't give it. We can't do it ourselves. It's a fallacy. So I think from that point of view, we are quite firm and confident we will get another one.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, welcome the finances. You know, sometimes the executives say he cannot plan, never the planning was wrong, because when you miss allocation, planning was not okay. Executives don't say that, understanding your last input, that planning was wrong when you have missed allocation. But another question, Chair, I know I'm new. Not a bank, but you know, when you do your financial diligence, your service delivery issues must align when you report the finances. They don't align. Maybe that is the way the committee or you agreed, but there's a method when you account for finances. Service delivery, for example, you had target achieved, you must know how much have you used for this. But you have explained teaching that your and it's like you're seeing my question saying, no, there's things you cannot have surplus somewhere, you have more, you spend more, but you're saying at the end of the year everything will be okay, even the financial year. I mean, it's like, you know, instead of, if you've targeted 100,000 to be used in the first quarter, why not use that 100,000? Saying, no, I'm not going to use, not busy in the first quarter, which is understand. Second quarter, we use part of that. But as a critic, and I'm still new, another question that I wanted to find out, you know, when I'm checking my finances, goods and services, must be specific when you account of goods and services. What are those? Just say detailed. Don't say just goods and services. Like you've explained Orlando Ekaya. For me, Orlando, I'm thinking Orlando Ekaya. Which is the hospitality. I see the 14 million which was spent here, but understood that it's hospitality. But other goods and services, there must be detail. What are goods and services for that? But that is my observation, Chair, for now. I think maybe in future I'll understand when I get along.
One feels that we are new. We all started in this committee, new in the committee, but we are learning as we are going, and I'm suspecting that you can do it. Don't feel that we are new. Just contribute as if you have been with us. We take your points and suggestions. Don't feel that we are new. Some other things happened whilst you were not in the committee, but just now we are in the committee. These documents will be reading, they will take you there because you can read and understand things. Did you?
Maybe let me start, Chair. I think the issue around goods and services, we'll give some notes further. We'll give further notes because there's a level that we've been reporting it. We've been reporting at that level. So if additional information is required, we'll make notes to say in this program, goods and services constituted by indigenous gains this much, you know, we'll go to that level in terms of the numbers. The issue around the alignment, I'm not sure if there's any government department which has arrived at the point where you spend 50% of your budget, and in terms of targets, it's 50%. I'll give you a typical example. We said that in the first quarter, we've got a number of programs that we are expected to undertake. In terms of percentage, the expectation is that we should be at 25%. But in terms of planning, we've not planned that by the first quarter we'll be at 25%. We know that in the first quarter we'll be at 20%. Maybe as we report, you must start saying that we don't expect to be at 20, 25%.
5%, even though in terms of arithmetic, if you divide it by 4, it's 25, 25, 25, 25. So what it means is that we must start saying that we're expecting to be 20% in the first quarter, that's where we are. You know, but arithmetically, Treasury says that 25, 25, 25, 25. That's what makes up a year. But we know, we can say it now in this committee that we know that in the first and the second quarter we underspent. Then in the third quarter, because that's where we implement most of our programs, we know that we are going to go to above 75%. In the fourth quarter, we know that we'll be doing these few programs, we'll go to 98 or 99%. You don't also want to plan for 100% because what if there are issues? So if you go back to our annual reports, previous annual reports, we hover around 99.9%. You don't know what will happen in the last day. Something goes through your account, out unauthorized expenditure. I have to come and explain many things. So that's what we do. It's not a perfect science, the fact that at any given time, in terms of output, you'll be at 25%, and in terms of budget, you'll be at 25%. I'm still saying that given that government department, which in any province, give it to me, then I'll say that, no, I don't know. We'd need to take a study tour there to go and learn how is that. But we're able to explain ourselves that in the third quarter, the expectation is that we'll get at this percentage. But the other issue is that you would know that it's not like we've not met those targets. Some of them, the programs have been undertaken, but evidence has not yet come through. So that's why we are not recognizing those ones as targets have been achieved. It means that we only recognize a target that has been achieved once evidence has been received by strategic support unit. So expenditure would have been incurred, but a target might not have been recognized as having achieved at that time. So you have those issues. Thank you.
Except that I can say that we are happy that since we came in this committee, and Honorable Musa can tell, always getting a clean audit. So we need to improve on some things that you have said, but we are trusting that even this time we'll be getting clean audit. But our views are very important that you must, because you have been listening to us, our views must be taken. And Honorable Mhlongo doesn't have, he mustn't have any fears that he's doing the committee. His contribution will assist more on the department, because now we are used on how they are doing program one and up to program four and five. We always, like your good self, wanted that it must be in black and white and detailed. I'm suspecting you didn't do that because you were thinking that we do follow what you have been telling us. But he has got a right to ask, and I'm hoping that what he is asking, the office of SUNY will be getting information for himself. I'll brief him on that.
Okay, no, thank you, Chair. No, Chair, like we said, planning is not, if planning is a plan. A plan is affected by a number of intervening circumstances, but it is a plan. And when you plan and they say you plan properly, you also try to identify potentially intervening circumstances. Can you exhaust all of that? I don't really think so. So will the planning ever be perfect? I doubt. But that's why there are mechanisms in the law that should you vary or you have intervening circumstances, you can apply for variance. That's why that is provided as a mechanism. Otherwise, we would have been slaves to our own budget and would have been slaves to our own plans and would have left, accounting-wise, been in a serious quagmire right across the state if these mechanisms were not put in place.
And that's why even the AG that plays the oversight role on us accept those mechanisms, because there are mechanisms available at law. Right now, I can tell you, since 2016, the AG, first time last year, the APP for the financial year we are in, they audited it, pre-audit, to determine, and they came to brief this committee, to determine whether the KPIs were aligned to the budget. It was the first year ever they have done so. They made us change the APP then. So that is what I'm saying. From an issue of alignment, I think the planning, we were aligned. And that's why, for the first time, our cash flow reflected, because they said, don't take money and receive it in April and in May and in June when you know you're not going to use it. You know you are going to use your money in the third quarter. So don't take the bulk of the money. Take only what is enough. So you'll see our cash flow for the first time last year looked very different. It will not comply with this norm. And that's why I started earlier to say this 25, 50, 75, that doesn't work for us. So right now, maybe the committee must say, we must, when we report, and not report based on the norm of the Treasury, we must say according to our cash flow, we had anticipated to receive this much. We received this much, and we have spent 90 or 99. Of it. Maybe that's the fair thing to do, but the only norm which across all the departments, and which brings me to the second issue, Chair, because all the departments are expected to report to portfolio committees in a standardized format, as determined not just by government, but as determined by the office, the leader of government business, your appropriation committee and your portfolio committee for the standing committee for finance and public accounts have met with the Treasury and with what, and they agreed on the template. This template we are using and this format is a standardized format across government. I'm just saying Parliament will have to help us first and change it completely so that we can immerse ourselves in that. And it was felt that for purposes of quarterly reporting, we don't have to go into deeper detail because that has not yet been audited. It's only when we report on the financial year and we table the financial reports and we table the annual financial statements together with the annual report that the committee can interact with the level of detail that Honorable Mutongo is asking, because at that time it's already audited and it is quite clear. But if as a department we are going to be subjected to that on a quarterly basis, we are going to have to go to that level of detail, I think there's going to be a problem. I don't think that we are going to be able to cope on a quarterly basis. We are a very small department with a very small financial section to be able to go to that level of detail that we are now being required to do. Maybe the CFO doesn't want to express this point, but he only has three people who do the accounts and every other thing, and they are the people who prepare this report. They are going to be forced to mine the data and use it after. You see, it's a bit of a challenge because we have to compile the data at the end of the financial year, and it's only then that the barcodes are unlocked by the CITA and the Treasury, because they don't want us during the financial year to be tampering with anything. They give us special codes, we punch them in. Only then, you see, that system starts, the bus system, the basic accounting system, starts calculating the numbers on its own and gives us the totals. It's only then that we get to see for the first time, according to the so-called score accounts, that we start seeing that indigenous game, we spend this much and this that much. Because everything that has to do with that tallies. And I'll tell you why that is the case. There's another system called Logis, is used in procurement. And because that's where the orders are issued, and some payments are also made, not on bus, but on Logis. If we do it quarterly, we may soon be accused that we misled this committee, because we would have drawn information on bus, raw as it is. Right now, bus can show us this broad total right through the year at the end of each quarter. And that's why it's easier for us to prepare a quarterly report in this format. And this format, the system has been made this way because this is the way Parliament agreed with the Treasury that we will account. So if it is to be changed to that level, it means that what bus does at the end of the financial year, where basically they have to close Logis, they give us notice to tell us, like now, we are left with 2 days, we are in the end of financial year processes. I can assure you that by next week, they will write us, Treasury will write to all departments and tell us and say, on this day, bars and lodges will be closed. During that closure, that shutdown, we are not able to pay anybody or issue orders and so on. Previously, the close down was like, when I became DG, it was like 2 weeks. Now, they have shortened the period. I think Treasury is getting smarter. But the close down last year was like 4 days. So during that entire 4 days, the system is adding up the totals, tallying up every other thing, and it also mines data from logis. It's the only time the two systems sit and make them to interface, and it mines everything, and that's why it will tell you where you are out and so on. But that is to help us in preparation for compilation of the annual financial statement. That's why I'm saying some data that's on logis, we will have to mine it manually, and I don't think that with the capacity of three people, we will be able to accurately do that and mine that data and add it together with logis and the orders at, on hand and everything, and then give the type of detail that has been requested. So I'm just saying from a practicality point of view, it may not be possible to do that. But all the time when we have finalized the score accounts and we know all the data, this committee knows that I've never refused to give anything. We give everything that is requested and what is required. So I was just saying that the template itself, we are guided. This is not our template. It's not us who design the report in this manner. We use exactly this by the Treasury because it's used across all the departments for all portfolio committees. So I think that's where the bit of a difficulty is with the request, Chair. But we are eager to provide any information as and when it becomes necessary and available. And maybe, Honorable Mutongo, I didn't want to go in detail earlier when we were discussing the issue of the Commonwealth Bill. The reason I was saying to you that we have to wait until the financial year's end for us to be able to tell you who traveled where, how much was the claim, all of that, that we are going to see at the score accounts once BAS and Logis closes. You know, that's when I will know for sure with yourselves to say, ha-ha, we are aligned.
By 4 o'clock will be done with this whilst they were outside. It was a good day. We've decided not to go to the oversight of this committee because we were having these outstanding issues like our department to come today, yesterday, the cricket. So I'm suspecting that we were wise, because if we did go, we were not going to get enough time of the agendas that we're having today. So we have taken the whole day because we wanted to do justice. I'm seeing that other members, they are in and out. We're not used to sit the whole day in the committee, but I'm suspecting that we've gained a lot amongst ourselves and the department. DG, we know that we're always counting on our department. When we want to whip you and the minister, but the committee, that we are not ashamed of doing that. And what I know, when we are coming here, you are always prepared, you must know your things, because we are fighters of the transformation in this committee, but very constructive. By those words, Honorable Member, we finish with our department. Thank you so much. I'm suspecting that being a DG, you will wish that you were a part of the funeral if there was not this call, because you're also an official of our government. I know sometimes you do attend this group, but thank that you have prioritized this day, because some of us, being knowing this veteran, we wish that you were part of going and put him to rest in peace. But we have this work which is in front of us. Thank you so much. We are always counting on you. Tell the minister that you have presented his department. You have tried your best. If it diarrhea on the 3rd of coming month is open, would love that when you are coming here, you must come with you. We'll appreciate, we'll write an official letter, but even your good self travel, you must try that diarrhea minister must be open on that day, on the 3rd. In those words, thank you very much. Servants of our people. Go well. Our thinking that is going to be 12 down. It was not. We do have committees that they are sitting until in the morning. Seemingly, we do take each one's contribution constructively. So there was no need that we must adjourn at 12 in the morning. In those words, thank you, DG. Honorable members, do you still have enough energy to deal with the report of yesterday, which was given to us to go and edit it? Honorable Mhlongo?
Yes, we don't have energy to directly say it. But we have read this out, propose we defer it to our next meeting. The
thank
proposal,
you.
Chair, but can we note it? Then because we didn't note it yesterday.
Yes.
We noted it, but we defer it to our next meeting.
Honorable member, the report was tabled yesterday, and then we noted we still want to be given time to read and correct it. Next meeting, we'll be discussing the report. Thank you. I don't have any announcement. The meeting adjourned.
Yeah.